What's good, everybody, and welcome to Body Bag Podcast. I'm Chris Thomas, and with me is always Broke Writer Dave.
How we doing, everybody?
Or I might be retitling this episode, Chris Goes Through His Midlife Crisis at 32. So he wants to reclaim his youth. Because I wanted to do a little something different for this particular month. I wanted to kind of delve into our childhoods a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's a very interesting thing because it doesn't really jive with the homework we gave each other. So it's not necessarily a very kid-friendly episode in general. But I wanted to kick things off with Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, which is a movie that I have a lot of fond memories of.
Yeah.
Were you a Scooby-Doo kid growing up?
I watched the cartoon a little bit, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I never really thought that Scooby-Doo was funny, but it was always just nice, entertaining background shows.
Yeah.
I'll gush over that in a minute. You gave me some homework that you were actually pretty anxious for me to watch.
Yeah.
And it was a movie that I wanted to watch when it came out last year. It was last year, right?
Yeah, it came out during the spring of 2023, yeah.
And I kept saying I was going to go see it, and I never did.
Yeah. I felt like it's a movie that was kind of right in your wheelhouse.
I do. And I will dive into it now. So, Infinity Pool, not by the original Cronenberg, but this was his son, is that right?
Yeah.
And if you know anything about Cronenberg, you know his wheelhouse has a lot of body horror. So when I went into this, I was thinking, okay, another Cronenberg in the Cronenberg family, so I can expect a bit of body horror in some fashion. I didn't come up with a beginning, like, non-spoily thing, so how about it's a couple goes on vacation, accidentally murders somebody, and this town that they have has a special way of dealing with people who have money but are also murderers. They get a special...
They get a free pass, basically.
They get a free pass, and I'll go into that. That's just the...
They gotta pay, but yeah.
They get a free pass from punishment in terms of, like, they get a mulligan. All right, so let me just go over some of the names here. We only need to know four people, really. You got James, played by Alexander Skarsgård. Gabby, played by Mia Goth. M, played by Cleopatra Coleman. And Albon, played by Jaleel Lispert. And this might have been the first Mia Goth movie. I think this was the first one I saw since X.
Okay.
And people gush over Mia Goth, but I haven't really seen her in too many things. It's not that I don't like her. She's just not been in my wheelhouse of movies I've watched.
Okay.
So this was good to see a good Mia Goth vessel.
Yeah.
Okay, so as I said at the beginning, you have a couple, M and James. They're on vacation to a place that I can't pronounce. It has like two Q's in the names and no U's.
Yeah.
And they befriend another couple, and at first I immediately thought, oh my god, is this gonna be Speak No Evil again? Two couples,
yeah,
befriend each other on a vacation. I was like, oh god,
right.
So for the first 20 minutes, they're just much like the Speak No Evil. They're having fun. They go out, do some drinking, having some fun.
Yeah.
And then it gets sexy. After a day of drinking, James goes out to pee. And this might be the first ambush hand job I've ever seen.
Right.
Mia Goth recognizes him, by the way. He's a writer. He's a struggling artist. And Mia Goth's character, Gabby. Is it Gabby?
I believe so, yeah.
Gabby, she really likes him. She's digging James's character. And he goes to take a pee, and then unbeknownst to him, he finishes his business, and Mia Goth is right behind him.
Yep.
Grabs him, and just... Now, I put a little star next to this that just says, discussion, question mark.
Yeah.
Discussion, question mark.
Yeah.
Talk for a second. Let me hear you.
Yeah, I mean, she just comes out of nowhere, starts, you know...
Yeah, you sound great.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she finishes him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what I would do if somebody ambushed me like that. Like, he's married.
Exactly. Like,
but, like, she already has his anatomy in his hand.
Yeah. Basically, she SAs him.
She SAs him.
Yeah.
Though he doesn't say stop.
No.
And you see the money shot, which I didn't think was that they were going to show in the movie. So then they go back to the car and starts an awkward car ride home.
Yeah.
James is driving. Everyone's drunk, though. Everybody's been drinking. And he's just driving, and the lights keep messing up, and he keeps trying to turn the lights back on, and he gets distracted, and boom. Runs into
guy, yeah.
Yeah, runs a dude over. Of all the places, you have a whole desert to drive, and you manage to hit the one person walking around.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's a little shook.
Yeah.
As anybody would be. He's like, holy shit, I just killed somebody. And Mia Goth and... I keep calling them by their actors. And their actors, but Gabby and Albon are like, yo, we got to get out of here. Look, yeah. you don't want to go to prison in a place like this. They'll rape you and kill you. And you're never going to see the outside world again.
Yeah, so let's just go.
Let's just leave.
Yeah.
So they leave. They make up some excuse to get back to the resort, which is kind of like in a compound. It's like you have this nice resort, but like outside the compound, it's kind of like Rio de Janeiro in some places, where if you go to certain parts of Rio de Janeiro, it's fine. But once you go to the outskirts, it gets
really shady. Dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. They get back to the compound, and then next morning or a day later, like they get a knock on their door. They just want to go home.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of Dodge. And they hear a knock at the door. They open up the door, and who's standing there but the authorities?
Yep.
So this wasn't a let's see if we can get away with it. They get caught immediately.
Yeah.
They get taken to jail, and I love the interaction here, because he's just talking like this is. They're like, "Well, you killed a person, even if it was we have the people that you hung out with yesterday, Gabby and Albon, saying that you stole this car that you guys basically." Yeah. Ran this guy over with. You went on a joyride, got drunk, and basically ran over a guy. And then you left. Now, bear in mind, James isn't wealthy. He was born... He married into wealth.
Yeah. His wife is wealthy, yeah.
His wife is wealthy. Specifically, her father is wealthy.
Yeah.
So, they basically say, well, you killed somebody out of the country, and law dictates that you have to die. We're going to bring in his son... or his sons, and they will basically publicly execute. Yeah. It's like, huh?
Yeah.
You're going to get a 9-year-old, 13-year-old to come in and kill me? And he's like, or we have this special thing for rich people where we will create a double of you and stand in as your death, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. I love that they just have this technology.
Right.
Like there's no explanation. It's like, yeah, we just have this.
Yeah, this very poor country has this technology to clone people.
And they said it had something to do with how they keep their tourism up, because it's a lot of rich people who come to this resort.
Yeah, basically, rich people come there, fucking break the laws, and...
then just pay to sweep it under the rug, pretty much.
Yep.
Now, that doesn't sound like... I mean, that sounds like a whatever premise. That sounds like a premise we've heard 1,000 times, but now they add the cloning bits in it.
Yeah.
And they said there also is one caveat, if you sign and do this, you have to witness the execution.
Yeah.
You can't just say, yeah, I want them, and then leave. So they attend the execution. There's Bill Skarsgård, or Alexander Skarsgård, James, standing, tied. Oh, and the clones have all of his memories. So as far as this clone knows, he thinks that he probably just made this deal, and he's like, why am I getting executed? I thought we made a deal kind of thing.
Yeah. What do you think of, the cinematography of, when he was getting cloned?
Because it's very trippy. It's very LSD or acid trippy, which is fine with me. Although I think that it went on a little long.
See, I felt it was similar Soho with that cinematography.
I know what you mean, because it's very disorganized, not disorganized, but very
disorientating. Yeah,
disorientating. That's the word I'm looking for. Especially in the beginning. In the beginning, the main credits, the entire shot is upside down and turning, rotating.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting, because I was like, all right, and it had loud bombastic music in the beginning, and I was like, all right, now Speak No Evil had the exact same thing with the loud bombastic music and long shots of the countryside, but for some reason this one's a little more entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
It felt more at home here. So James pretty much watches his clone die.
Yeah.
And oh, but in answer to your question, I did enjoy the trippy sequence.
Yeah.
I just thought it was just a touch long.
Okay.
But
I get that. Yeah.
But I did like it. So it's basically an LSD trip, and that shows you don't see the actual cloning process. You just take it for what it is. They got sees himself die. They give him the urn full of ashes, which I just think it's hilarious that they get a souvenir.
Yeah.
And he goes back home. He can't find his passport. His M is ready to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, his wife is like, I'm gone. Yeah, I'm
literally... didn't get the clone. She didn't get the clone, though.
No.
She didn't. She wasn't driving, so I guess we could just assume that she probably just paid to, get out. But he...
Well, he was the one that was charged with the crime, not her, so...
Right, right. Because he was the one driving.
Yeah.
So,
but she still has to sit there and watch her husband's clone die.
Who's crying out for her.
Yeah.
But I did have a... Oh, according to the guy who was questioning him, she sold him out and said, yeah, you... She agreed that you stole this car and killed a guy. Your wife has already confirmed that. So I was like, huh? You sold your own husband out?
I feel like that was just kind of like a police tactic where you just kind of lie to him.
That whole lie of like so-and-so already gave us our information.
Yeah.
So he's pretty traumatized, as anybody would be. And he and tells, oh, by the way, as he was watching himself get killed, you see like a little smile on his face.
Yeah.
Long story short, you can tell that he kind of enjoyed the experience.
Right.
And M has her passport. She's ready to leave. He can't find his passport. So he's forced to stay, but he also extends his trip by a week.
Yeah.
Without telling her. He goes down to the front desk and says, yeah, I'd like to be here for them. Sees me a Goth's character or Gabby.
Yeah.
And she's like, hey, yeah, sorry about all that. Sorry. Sorry for basically making you think you were about to die. And she introduces him to a group of people who are all basically socialites.
Yeah, socialites. They're all doing the same thing.
They love the idea of, yeah, we like coming here and killing people, and then we just... It's a liberating feeling to kind of see yourself, like, die kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which I understand that
message
of something very cathartic about seeing yourself die.
Right.
And for the next couple of days, they essentially take him on a hedonistic spree filled with sex, violence, and just drugs.
Yeah. And they also, when they had that discussion about whether or not they're the clone or not.
Yeah, very...
Very prestige. Interesting, yeah.
It's very much the prestige. What they were saying in the prestige is like, are you the clone or are you the one who survives? And it's like, have you seen that movie?
No.
Oh, sorry if I spoiled it, but fucking watch it. This movie is actually a lot like a lot of movies. I compared it to The Prestige. It felt a little bit like Clockwork Orange at one point.
Yeah.
That's what the trippy sequences make me think of Clockwork Orange a little bit. It also reminds me of Purge.
Okay.
Because of socialites just going around killing people.
Yeah.
The first Purge. Yeah. And Mia Goth is really... They have a number of these trippy sequences because Mia Goth gets James to pretty much inhale these hallucinogenic drugs.
Yeah.
And what follows is like a plethora of like... orgies,
crime,
violence, ultra violence, as Alex from Clockwork would say. And you can tell he's loving this.
Yeah.
He loves this hedonistic lifestyle. And so, and this is also where I would say another kudos to any actress or actor, female or male, who could just bear it all on screen.
Right.
Because this movie has a lot of sex in it and a lot of nudity. Yeah. And a lot of graphic nudity, too.
Yeah.
And I just respect anybody who can feel comfortable. I can't bear it all with like a director and a room full of people to just watch.
No.
I don't care how ripped I might look at the time, how I might have been working out for 6 months. I don't care. I guess.
Yeah.
Weird.
Nope. Yeah.
So one night during all this stuff, they're like, oh, we want to kill. Oh, and it's like rinse, repeat. They kill or do something and then they go and get like a clone, and then they watch the clone die.
Yeah.
And then they're like, we want to kill... Who is it that they wanted to kill? Was it one of the police officers who was keeping him there?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
They wanted to kill one of the police officers who, quote-unquote, was keeping him. He's not being kept there. His excuse is that he doesn't have his passport, but he wants
to be there. Yeah, the police took his passport, yeah.
So they bound and gag... They find him, bound and gag the guy, put a bag over his head, and then take him back to their little resort thing, and they get James to pretty much beat the shit out of him to death.
Yeah.
Beat him to death, and then he urinates on him, and then they unmask him, and it's actually his clone. They cloned him again. They paid the scientist people to clone him again, and they thought it would be funny if he beat his own self up.
Yeah.
Apparently,
so fucked up, dude.
Apparently, that's one step over the line, because he's like, yeah, it's time for me to get up out of here.
Yeah.
He gets his passport, and then the next morning, he's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Gets on the shuttle bus to get to the airport. He's driving, and all of a sudden, he hears something. He looks out the window. He sees, hey, it's the gang.
Yeah.
Hey, it's me.
You're
and
not going
the gang.
There. Yeah.
Oh, what do you think? You were just going to leave?
Yeah.
What are you, a freaking pussy? And I say that just because Mia Goth keeps antagonizing him, saying he's like, he keeps questioning his manhood.
Yeah.
But not necessarily questioning it, but by saying like, oh, you know, just little things, not necessarily calling him weak, but, you know, tell him how strong you are, you know, you shouldn't take that. You should, like, just whispering little things. So, brandishing a gun, they basically make him get off the bus.
And yeah.
This is where I didn't like a little bit, because they basically have him walk on the road. Something tells me they were just going to have him walk until he collapsed.
Yeah.
And Mia Goth is basically saying, what, you think that we do this all the time? We're weak and pathetic. You're an awful writer. We have fun and fuck with you for a while.
Yeah. As an aspiring author, worst you could get is a bad review, watch Infinity Pool.
Oh, because they don't
have being forced walked in front of the car.
Because they don't just
she's shitting all over his book.
And just reading bad reviews to him.
Yeah.
Saying only six, like a book that you made 6 years ago, and only a few people read it, and only a and just a handful of bad reviews. And it's like you just see him wanting to cry,
right?
It's like, dude, I feel bad for you if you didn't already show that you're a piece of shit too. So
right,
he is very much a coward.
Yeah.
Because he wants to live this hedonistic lifestyle, but he has no money to pay for it. So he's basically living off of his wife initially, and then off of these socialites are just letting him hang out.
Yeah.
He manages to escape, and then he just runs until he collapses. And family takes him in until he recovers. Another trippy dream sequence. Then he wakes up and goes outside. There's they found him. And they bring out they say, we're actually here to help you. Like, they're doing that whole under the guise of, like, you just need to let go. We're trying to free you from from everything holding you back kind of thing. And they are like, bring out the dog. And it is a fucking another clone, naked on a leash. And for the life of me, I thought that they were going to have him have sex with his own clone.
Oh, God.
Because they bring him out in what looks like S&M gear.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they're going to make him bone his own clone as a form of, like, catharsism.
See, that would have been, if they did that, I would be like, yeah, this movie's, I can't do this. It would have been too far for me. I'm like,
it would have been a little too much.
Yeah.
I honestly thought that's where it was going. I'm like, you can tell that without making the dude bone his own clone.
Yeah.
But no, they said, you have to fight your clone to the death. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then the clone starts attacking him. I guess they can, like, just genetically alter these clones, so he's pretty feral.
Yeah.
And now you said take too far. He kills his clone, and you can tell that he's traumatized from the experience. So, you know, Gabby puts her titty in his mouth.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Right? Just randomly. There you go.
Next day, time to go home.
Yeah.
Everybody's
Rainy season's coming.
Yeah, rainy season's coming.
Everyone's going back to their boring life.
Plus, he has his week is up. His wife ain't paying. His wife was pissed when she left because she's like, you are not the same dude that I married. Why do you want to stay here? We have to get out of here.
The one good person in this movie.
At least she lived. At least she got out. Although, he's going right back to her, which she should have dumped his ass.
Well, he doesn't leave the island.
Oh, yeah, because he just ends up staying. Like, well, he was on the phone with her saying that he didn't want to miss the shuttle bus going. So she was willing to take him back.
Yeah.
But he pretty much, it ends with him just fucking staying there, and it's raining, and he's just, I guess he's just part of the island.
Yeah.
Waiting for tourist season to kick back up again.
Right.
And that's how it ends. And that's Infinity Pool.
Yeah.
So, this was my homework. I liked it. It was a good movie.
Yeah.
It's weird because it was longer than Speak No Evil, but it did have a lot of long scenes like that, but I didn't feel bored.
Yeah.
That was the
problem.
There's
always something. Yeah, there's always something to grab your attention going on.
There's always something happening, whether it be the trippy visuals or their actual tense thing. Like when he gets arrested at the beginning, you're like, because I didn't know anything going into this.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, oh God.
And I'm glad that they even brought it up because at the very beginning, I was thinking, what if this James was the clone?
Yeah.
This whole time, and they killed the original one from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that was going to be the big final act twist, but then one of the socialites kind of brought it up. I was like, oh, they knew that the audience was going to be thinking this, so they addressed it. So you're just left not knowing, so that's good.
Yeah.
And like I said, glad I caught this, but I got the message. The message obviously is if you are just left to your own devices, how evil would you be? There was only one or two scenes that are nitpicky. Like I said, the LSD hallucinogenic scenes, I think, kind of go on just a touch too long. But that's a nitpick. And Mia Goth's monologue also kind of...
Yeah.
I was like, all right, this is... I get what you mean, but this is kind of going on a little... although I will say that for a standout scene, if we're picking scene of the movie, I will say that the trippy scene.
Yeah.
Because the scene is good. And I do like how they do the trippy scene. Like I said, it's a little long. But let me go ahead and break it down.
All right.
Technicals, I gave a 7.4.
7.4?
7.4. It shot very well. There is a lot of shot. There are a lot of shots. If this bugs you, don't watch it. The shots are meant to make you feel off balance.
Yeah.
From the beginning, you are meant to kind of feel either like you're falling or you're tripping or you're just off balance. If that bugs you or if you can get uncomfortable with that or if that makes you nauseous, don't watch it. It was shot very competently. So I think a 7.4 is pretty good.
Okay.
The story, I gave it 8.1.
8.1, all right.
I think the story is a very good idea. It's a familiar concept with clones. I mean, they've talked about certain... It feels like a mash of a bunch of movies that I like. A little bit like Blade Runner with the clones. A little bit like... Clockwork Orange, the socialite aspect makes me think a little bit of The Purge. And enjoyment, I gave 7.6.
Okay.
I had fun watching it. I could definitely see myself watching it again. I'll definitely probably watch it at least one more time this year.
So it's a 23.1 out of 30.
Yeah, solid movie pick. As the movie was going on, I knew it was like an hour and 50 minutes maybe, or an hour and like 40 something. But I was surprised how fast-paced it was, or how it didn't drag.
All right.
And I gave you something.
Definitely gave me something.
Did I give you Ravenous?
You did.
Yeah. I gave it to you for a couple of reasons, but I'll just... The floor is yours.
You gave me 1999 movie Ravenous. Quick review. This army captain's basically a bitch.
Yep.
So he gets sent to outposts in the middle of nowhere.
What was the year it was supposed to take?
It's during the Mexican-American War. Right,
so it is. So it's back in the day. So it's not a modern times.
I think it's 1847, something like that.
It's that era of like the late 1800s.
Yeah. So during the Mexican-American War, you got Second Lieutenant John Boyd, who's fighting for the U.S. And during the battle, he just lays down, plays dead. Mexicans grab him up, throw him in a pile of bodies. From there, he captures their command unit by, like, pure luck. So he got a promotion, but, you know, the general's like, you're a little bitch.
He just says it.
Yeah, for the optics, we gotta give you this promotion, but...
But you's a bitch.
You's a bitch. So I'm gonna send you to California, where there's nothing going on.
We'll send you where you can do the least amount of damage.
Yeah, so, which... He sent him to the California Post, which is kind of like, probably like the northern...
It's cold. Mountainous,
the cold area of California.
It's a lot of mountains, a lot of wooded area, snow.
Yeah. And basically gets there, finds out there's only like 8 people there. And, you know, his major is like, we just kind of hang out and chill. People just stop here when they're heading to Nevada.
Which, in all honesty, for a fuck up, I'd be like, I'll take this post.
Yeah. It's like, you really got much to do. Find a hobby.
Find a hobby, chop some wood, and just stick it out.
And so, and then shortly after he gets there, they send Martha, who's like a Native American scout for him, and one of the privates to go get supplies.
Which, I will also say that I forgot that this movie has a decent amount of like recognizable talent.
It does, yeah, because the private's played by David Arquette.
Yeah, and Guy Pearce is the main... Guy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And then
shortly after that, a frostbitten stranger kind of arrives, and they're like, oh, what the hell is this?
Who is this?
Let's bring him in, you know, warm him up, save this guy's life.
Yep.
And then once the guy is awake and everything, he tells a story about how they were going through a train they should have never been going through, and then they got caught in a cave.
Yeah.
And he was stuck there for 3 to 6 months, something like that.
Yeah, I was saying for a while.
Yeah, and they're like, how'd you survive without food? He's like, well, first we ate the horses and the bulls, and then people started eating each other.
Yeah.
And I escaped before I was eaten.
Yeah, they had to resort to cannibalism.
Yeah. And he's basically like, hey, you know, there's a cannibal still up in the mountain, so they have to go out looking for Martha the Private. And they get to the caves where Boyd's at, where he was staying. And then this is where this movie kind of...
makes a little turn.
Yeah, you figure out what this movie is. So, Boyd, the bitch officer, and one of the privates played by Neil McDonald.
I'm just trying to remember 28 Days Later guy. Robert Carlyle.
Yeah, Robert Carlyle plays the guy who can't, the stranger Los Rossman.
Yes.
So, while they're investigating the cage, Robert Carlyle's just kind of, he's being weird.
Yeah, he's acting off.
Yeah, freaking him out. And these two things kind of happen concurrent, that John Boyd kind of discovers all the bones and realizes, oh, that guy up there is a cannibal.
You're the guy who we've been following is a cannibal.
Yeah. And the cannibal escapes his restraints, stabs the major, and then throws a knife at the other Native American scout that was with him that was about to shoot him with an arrow.
Hmm.
Kills him. And then the other private that was there with him, who's kind of like useless, he's like, run away. So he ran away.
So yeah.
Yeah. So the private and John Boyd get out of the cave, and private's like, come on, we got to chase this guy. John Boyd's like, I really kind of don't want to do that. But, you know, he ends up chasing him. And the private gets, was it a knife thrown at him? And then he falls off the cliff?
Yeah, it was a knife.
Yeah. And then John Boyd shoots him. And he's like, oh, all right, this is over. Dude does just a couple seconds later gets up. And so instead of, like, trying to fight the guy that he just shot, John Boyd's like, I'm going to take a swan dive off the cliff.
Yeah, I got it. I got to get out of here.
He jumps off the cliff and tries to break his fall using trees. It looks painful.
I mean, I would probably try the same thing.
Yeah. Lands on the ground, rolls down the hill.
I'm sure he's fine.
Yeah. Ends up falling into, like, this crater with his dead private at his side.
Yeah, and he's not in good shape.
Yeah, so while he's in that, in there with his dead private, you just kind of see scenes of...
the day's going by.
Yeah, the day's going by.
He's getting weaker.
Yeah, Robert Carlyle's just chilling out, having a good time, skipping rocks and shit.
Yeah, he's acting crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then basically,
he's only left with one option.
Yeah, he starts, he eats the body of the private that he's with there to stay alive.
The dead private. He tries to hold out as long as he can, but he's like, I'm so weak. I have to have something to stop.
Yeah. And then he makes his way out, delirious and traumatized.
But stronger.
Stronger, yeah. Limps his way back to camp. And I think it's also while he was in the pit, you kind of see the scene of when he was, what originally happened to him in Mexico. Is when he played dead, they stacked him in a pile of bodies, and the blood of somebody dripped into his mouth. When that happened, it gave him the courage to stand up and go.
So there's,
fight. Yeah.
So there's an actual supernatural element.
Yeah, of the Wendigo,
which is one of the big reasons why I wanted to recommend this, because the Wendigo is one of my favorite cryptid.
And when he's there, he gets back to camp, finds General Slauson there, the guy who originally sent him, and they assign a new colonel.
That was the father from Beetlejuice, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I his name escapes me, but I know he's the dad from Beetlejuice.
Yeah, new colonel is the Wendigo that kills everybody.
Yeah.
And he tells them, and they're like,
he's like, straight up.
Yeah. They're like, no, shut up. And then Colquhoun, the Wendigo, tries to make him eat, and when he doesn't, he's like, oh, this guy attacked me. He cut my hand. So they lock up John Boyd. Yeah, basically framing him for everyone that's died since he's been back.
Which is funny, because you just see, initially, Robert Carlyle, is his name Calhoun? Is that
what it is? Yeah, Calhoun.
Calhoun's, like, has been, like, just, like, crazy looking this whole time, and then when you see him back at the compound, he's, like, in proper attire.
Yeah.
And with his hair, like, actually combed. He's like, yeah, that guy attacked me.
Basically, Boyd does eventually gives in each stew made from Nox, which is basically has human meat in it.
And it's fully known now.
Yeah. It's fully known. They're eating human remains.
It's like the whole thing is that like the Wendigo, if you don't know, like it turns people into cannibals, makes people resort to cannibalism like in the mountains. Yeah. But supposedly, like according to this lore in this movie, if you eat the flesh of another human being, you get stronger.
Yeah.
It heals you, and it gives you like pretty much supernatural strength.
Yeah, and then like Celeste's like, hey, I don't want to live like this anymore, so kill me. Just make it fast. Well, he does, kind of. Slits his throat. And then Boyd and Calhoun, they throw down. And Boyd forces them into a large bear trap that pins both of them together. And yeah, Boyd doesn't eat Calhoun, and they both die.
I was going to say he goes out with his morals intact, but he still ate some people beforehand.
Yeah.
But and he took out, I guess his last act was an act of courage, I guess.
Yeah. The redemption arc.
His redemption.
Yeah. From and someone then, who started as a complete coward to someone who gave his life to kill this man.
It'll be very interesting for when the next group of officers come by.
Right.
And they're like, what in the hell happened here?
Yeah.
It's like, why were they resorting to eating each other? You guys had plenty of food.
Yeah. Look at all this food that's here. They didn't need to eat each other. Jesus. But yeah.
This is the trading post that, this is like the middle ground. This is where people come to get stocked up.
Yeah.
So that was ravenous.
Yeah. It was okay.
Yeah. I didn't think you were going to love it.
No.
But we hadn't talked about any Wendigos, and it was different enough that I try to, it was different enough that I don't think a lot of people have really watched it. So I thought, why not?
Yeah. And plus for me, like period pieces, for me to really enjoy them, they have to be good. And this is such an awkward like time period too, where really, you don't see a lot of, but.
Yeah. But at least the, plus I also, it has a number of actors that I like Robert Carlyle I really like, and Guy Pearce really good.
Yeah.
It has been a long time since I watched it, but.
It had a pretty decent cast, yeah.
But I didn't think you were going to walk out of it going, this was amazing.
Yeah. So, for technicals, it was shot okay. It was pretty decent.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. It's nothing big. It's competent enough to be like, yeah, it's a movie.
Yeah, I would give it a 5.7. And then story, it was a rather unique take on the Wendigo.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily...
give it that, yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a creature, but a spirit of some sort that just kind of, anybody can be a Wendigo.
Exactly. So for that, I'm going to give it a 6.1. And then enjoyment, I'm going to give it a 5.2.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
It is a kind of, like, average movie.
It's a movie you really need to be in the mood for.
I will say that it's a good average movie.
Yeah.
It's a something's on movie.
Yeah. So a total of 17 out of 30.
That's fine. I am glad at least one other person knows about it.
Yeah.
But we need to assign. We're doing all this talking. We're like 40 minutes in. We haven't even talked about the main movie.
Yeah.
So homework we need to assign to each other.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched this one or if I tried before, but did you watch the Experiment?
That sounds familiar.
It has Adrian Brody and Forest Whitaker. I had mentioned it in passing saying that it was kind of like the whatever experiment.
Oh, about the Sanford Experiment?
Yes.
I have actually been meaning to watch this movie.
All right, so that's my recommendation to you, is you got to watch The Experiment.
Okay.
Because I remember mentioning it to you in passing and saying it was just like the Stanford Experiment, and you knew exactly what that was, so...
Yeah, because that experiment, like, reading that was so intriguing to me, so...
It's a very... If you guys don't know about it, I'd say definitely... It's a very fascinating, like, look into, like, human psyche.
Yeah. And I'm going to give you another good movie from last year...
You're giving me a lot of recent ones.
Yeah. And it's starring... it does have Cleopatra Coleman in it. I think she's kind of become like an unsung actress in horror.
I've been seeing her name popping up a lot lately.
She's very good. So I'm going to give you Cobweb.
Oh, I've seen it.
Have you seen it?
I have seen Cobweb. She was the teacher, right?
Yeah. That was such a good movie.
I saw that along with Night Books around the same time because they... it was Halloween season and they all were talking about... Cobweb was by far my most requested, like on Instagram, was my most requested people saying, you need to watch Cobweb.
Yeah.
So then I finally caved and watched it.
All right. Did not have a backup.
Did not have. Come on, man. You're a movie reviewer. Surely you have something for me.
You know what? Because I know you only watched like a little bit of this movie because we never got to review it.
Skinamarink again.
No. So I'm going to give you The Black Phone.
Okay. That's cool. That's cool with me, because that was back when we had Spencer Hamilton was supposed to come on, and
it just never happened, yeah.
And because life, I watched half of the movie and then meant to watch the rest of it, and then life happened.
Yeah.
As of right now.
I really watched half of it. It's so good.
Because I probably was watching it, and then I had to go to work or something.
Yeah.
I think the kid first made contact with the first ghost and was going to walk upstairs. That's about where I'm at right now.
Yeah, just watch it all the way through.
Okay, I promise. All right, so that's good. A movie that I've been meaning to finish and a movie that you've been meaning to watch.
Well, yeah.
All right. Let's go to the movie of the hour here, which is funny to go from two rated R movies to, let's talk about Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
It was, I wanted to do a sea of childhood movies, and this one just was the first one that stuck out to me. And I always loved the cartoon Halloween specials every year when I was a kid. And I forgot if I asked you earlier, were you a Scooby-Doo fan?
Like, I enjoyed the cartoon. I'd watch them if they were, like, on Cartoon Network. But I was never, like, going out of my way to watch Scooby-Doo. Even though live-action movies, though, are really good.
Now, for people who might not know, because I don't know what kind of iteration Scooby-Doo is right now. But back in the day, there were no monsters. There were no actual, like, ghouls or goblins. The format was, it was always a creepy guy or woman in a mask.
Yeah.
Except for, I think, maybe the Vincent Price special had actual ghosts in it. But for a movie, for the most part, it was like, it's always just a man in a mask.
Yeah.
So this was the first time it's the first movie that I know of, feature length, that they were like, well, we're going to actually, well, the premise being, these might be actual monsters this time.
Yeah. It starts off with a gang. They've all been separated, doing their own thing.
They've been doing this for years, and it's like, it's always a guy in a mask.
Yeah, so they decide to call it quits, and they split up. Daphne has a morning talk show that's produced by Fred.
Seems appropriate.
Yeah. Velma owns a bookstore. And then Shaggy and Scooby work for...
TSA.
Yeah, the TSA.
That was funny. But Oh, and by the way...
They got fired right when the band got back together.
But by the way, I just want to list out some names for you, by the way. Jim Cummings, Billy West, Adrian Barbeau, Tara Strong, Mark Hamill, Cam Clark. This is like a who's who of voice actors movie.
Yeah.
I was expecting like Phil Lamar or Tom Kenny to come out of nowhere. But like, this is a lot of like back in the day voice actors. Some of them who are still going strong now. Continue.
Daphne said she's going to find something that's actually haunted for a TV show. And Fred's like, thinks it's a good idea to get everyone back together. So they reunite. And
the gang misses each other.
And then they said, all right, our first stop's New Orleans. And then shows a montage of them stopping at a bunch of different places that aren't haunted.
The music in this is so 90s.
Yeah.
They have a couple of songs in this that is very, very mid to late 90s rock.
Yeah.
Or what kind of music would that be? Now, I wouldn't necessarily say rock, but it's very Green Day-ish.
Like pop rock type of stuff.
Yeah, like I said, Green Day-ish or Sum 41, you know, those kind of bands. Offspring.
Right.
So they have a montage, and it's all just guys in masks, you know, same as it used to be back in the day. But then they get a lead on about this estate that has a sordid past to it. An estate that takes a boat ride to get there. It's old Louisiana from probably a plantation back in the day.
Yeah, in the bayou.
In the bayou. So they're like, hey, all right, let's go check it out. Jim Cummings plays the boatman.
Yeah.
And they go, and they run in. Along the way, they run into this other guy who's a fisherman around the air. He's a rough around the edges kind of fisherman.
Trying to catch this giant catfish that no one's been able to catch for years.
I wonder if that'll play a part.
Right.
But he's very standoffish. He doesn't like tourists.
Yeah.
They make it to the island, and they're looking around. It's very, very nice. And the estate, the estate kind of makes me think, you ever see the movie Skeleton?
No, but I've heard of it, yeah.
That estate is kind of what it looks like. And they're looking around, and a couple of things to note about this place. A, they didn't know that Scooby was, I don't know how they didn't know Scooby-Doo was with them, but they take offense to the dog being there. They don't like the fact that the dog is there.
And there's a bunch of cats, Scooby. There's like three or four scenes where Scooby's chasing the cats.
Yeah. And it is essentially in the middle of the bayou, and the bayou's pretty much surrounded by a marsh that's alligator infested.
Yeah.
So we meet the woman, the countess of the place. Her name is Simone, is it?
Simone, yeah. Lena is the girl who brought him there. It's kind of like the helper.
She's her, like, probably that takes care of the house. So we get a little bit of backstory about this island. And just know, throughout all this, is your typical cartoon shenanigans are going on. Scooby and Shaggy are hungry. They want they're always looking for food. Daphne is caring about the TV show. Fred is kind of hitting on Lena.
Lena, yeah.
And Velma is the only one essentially trying to solve a mystery.
Yeah.
The past is essentially that...
It's called Moonscar Island because
Moonscar,
pirate Captain Moonscar got shipwrecked there.
Him and his crew got shipwrecked, and it's like a big mystery as to what happened to him.
Yeah, and his spirit still haunts the island, and that's why people have gone missing.
Yeah, and they say it's like at night, some spirits get restless.
So
throughout, they take a tour of the place, and we also get introduced to the local gardener, kind of keeping the landscape clean. He's been there for a couple months. And right off the bat, you see some paranormal stuff. Velma levitates, and the spirit carves into the thing. Get out.
Yeah. And they're like, let's figure out how this happened.
And Fred, who's sitting there filming all this as it's going on, which, as a guy who used to run camera, he shot, like, Daphne, or the levitation, and then shot... Velma was levitating. Daphne was doing some little, now check this out, guys, kind of thing for the camera. And he punches some stuff on the camera, says, let me just adjust the sharpness and do that. In 1998, you couldn't do that with a kind of camera.
No.
Let me just adjust the sharpness and zoom in.
Zoom in on this little corner of this camera.
Oh. And get a picture-perfect ghost. Which, hey, look, I guess ghosts are real. Levitation happened. No big deal. Let's still kind of look around the area. Let's still do this.
And they find out that pieces of the ship were used to build a house.
Parts of the ship from when Moonscar got stranded where it was built a house. Gets late and they're staying over for dinner.
Yeah.
Again, I have to say this. If I were Simone, I would have fucking hated Scooby and Shaggy too. These people have been doing nothing but ruining their house.
Like are the worst house guests ever.
I love Scooby-Doo in the game.
Yeah. But I was going to leave hours ago. I'm like, you guys could just go.
Like, first off, the second they got there, like, oh, I didn't know you have a dog. We have cats. And then they're like, well, Scooby's well-behaved. And then the second he sees a cat, he jumps all over Simone.
Yeah.
Like, run and rips up the flower bed.
Yeah.
They've been doing nothing. When they go inside, they've been scratching up the walls, trying to find clues, eating up all of her food, breaking glasses. They're horrible house guests.
Terrible.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who thought so.
Yeah. Well, Simone's like, Scooby, you gotta go eat somewhere else, man.
You gotta go eat outside, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be in here. And every time Scooby does this, you can tell Simone getting pissed off more and more.
Yeah.
So Lena makes them a little crawfish boil, and they go out to the mystery machine, and they're like, well, we'll eat in here, I guess. Well, yes. Scooby and Shaggy.
Cats are jumping on, so Shaggy's like, I'm going to drive away from here.
Yeah. So they eat right there, and while they're eating, I forget what prompted them to leave the van.
Yeah.
But they leave the van, and what's so funny is, like, it is very much like Clue, because it is treated like a whodunit, because they run into, like, the gardener at one point. Even freaking what's-his-face, the who's the fisherman guy?
I don't remember his name. Just old salty fisherman guy. They're like...
Old salty fisherman guy who has the voice of Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
And he's out there fishing too. Like, everybody's out there somehow out in the middle of this bayou, and so everybody looks suspect.
Yeah.
And everybody looks suspect, and they're still trying to figure out, all right, I don't know exactly... Well, their whole thing is that they're trying to find out the mystery of this place. Now we start getting into where it gets serious.
Yeah. Because now zombies.
Well, Shaggy and Scoob, they get scared because they are easily scared, and then they fall down into this pit. And while in this pit, they're trying to get out, and it unlooses some of the dirt, and they see a skeleton hand come out, and they're like, holy shit. And then shortly after that, you just see the wind pick up and this aura come, and then the skeleton comes, reanimates itself, and it's a zombie pirate. Time to get out of here. They book it, run into the flower guy. Bo was the name of the landscaper, who, I guess, it's 11 o'clock at night. I'm just doing my midnight
gardening.
Yeah. So he's out there, and they're like, hey, look. And of course, nobody believes it, because they turn around and like, there's nobody here. It was Fred and Velma were like, we heard screaming. Yeah. What was that?
Yeah. And then Velma went to Bo. She's like, why are you out here? I think you're guilty.
I'd be like, who are you?
I'm going to keep my eye on you because I know you're guilty.
Okay.
What? All right.
Yeah, if you're Bo, you're like, okay, I'm pretty sure I can take you.
Yeah. Okay.
So now we've had spiritual stuff going on inside the place, and we've had it going on outside.
Yeah.
So now essentially this is a haunted island now. And so night comes along, and now the zombies are in full force. We have a big chase sequence throughout the I keep wanting to call it the jungle, but the bayou.
Well, first, Fred and Daphne catch a zombie, and they're like, this isn't real.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to pull its mask off. And I pull off that, like, oh, maybe it's an animatronic.
That's right. They accidentally knock out a zombie that was chasing, and they're like, oh, see? Here we go. This thing ended, so let's go ahead and unmask and see who it is. Who is it, the ferryman? Who is it? Yeah. What's his face? And then Fred just basically, good thing it wasn't a real person, because he just ripped that thing's head off.
Right.
And then the chase sequence starts. Then all the zombies start to come out to play. And not just pirate ghosts, but we see our pirate zombies, but we see zombies of, like, tourists.
Yeah.
And old Civil War ghosts and zombies. So it's basically zombies from generation.
Yeah. And then Fred drops his video camera in the quicksand.
Well, too, I guess there goes your TV deal.
Yeah.
And then another 90s... 90s punk rock montage.
Scooby-Doo chase montage.
Yeah. Terror Time was the name of that song. Yeah. That was the song that I remembered the most from my childhood, is Terror Time. Chase, shenanigans. Scooby-Doo and Shaggy tumble into a secret cave where there's some wax figurines. They're picking them up and they're like, what is this? And they look exactly like the gang, Scooby-Doo and the gang, or Fred, Velma, and Daphne.
Yeah.
They pick them up and they're like playing with them, and elsewhere you see them start to levitate, like, well, we got voodoo now.
Yeah.
It's like this movie feels like they were like, all right, well, this is going to be our first Scooby-Doo movie. What's the what creature or monster should we do? Should we do zombies? Should we do ghosts? Why don't we do them all?
Throw them all in there. Yeah.
Why don't we throw them all in there? So now we got voodoo going on. And I feel like I've been talking a little much. You can go ahead and pick up from now.
Yeah, and so then you have Lena claiming that the zombies drug Simone into a secret passageway.
Why do you have a secret?
Yeah, they're like, the zombies took her. We got to go down there. And they get down there, and Velma's like, wait a minute. You said she was dragged, but I see footprints.
She walked here.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, we're evil.
Oh, yeah, by the way.
We're evil with these voodoo dolls. We're going to mess you up. And throws, basically uses the voodoo dolls to throw Fred, Velma, and Daphne against the wall.
Incapacitate.
Yeah.
So now we see our real bad guys.
Yeah.
And we get the true history of the island.
Simone and Lena reveal themselves as werecats.
Yeah, we got a little bit of, what's that movie called? What's that Stephen King movie called? Where's the cat people?
Oh, I have no idea.
You know which one I'm talking about?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, it's going to bug the ever-loving crap out of me if I don't remember that. But anyway, yeah. So,
basically, explains that 200 years ago, she and Lena were part of a group of settlers that worshipped a cat god. And when Moonscar and his crew invaded the island, they chased them into the bayou where they were eaten alive by alligators.
I was surprised, like, looking back. I was like, wow, that's fucking dark.
Yeah. But Simone and Lena escaped. They prayed to the cat god that turned them into werecats.
That was also good. Now we have cults into.
Yeah, and every cult harvest moon, they transform. And been using tours and everybody to suck out their life force to keep their immortality going.
Why they're cat? Well, because it's a cat god. We were settlers. Yeah. And by the way, we worship a cat god.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Here in America?
Yeah.
Like here in New Orleans?
Early settlers in America? All right.
Really? We'll roll with it. And so each harvest moon they have to basically kill to stay alive.
Yeah.
Right now we have zombies, we have ghosts, we have voodoo, we have cults, we have werecats.
Yeah.
And legit people almost and legit mass murder from pirates.
Yeah. So Scooby and Shaggy get chased by the zombies into the secret passage where they're at. And they're like, hey, Scooby, Shaggy, they're the ones that are evil, not the zombies.
Apparently the zombies were trying to warn them, like with all of this get out business. They were like trying to say, get out of here before you suffer a fate worse than me.
Yeah. And then you see Lena somehow transform into a cat. And they chase Scooby and Shaggy. They get to the
ferryman.
Ferry. Where oh, thank God. Turns into a werecat.
Oh no, shock.
Yeah. Shocker.
Yeah, you need a belt, man.
Yeah. The voodoo dolls that were keeping them all tied up end up within reach, so
they get
the
loose.
The gang can now escape. And they save Scooby and Shaggy right as Simone and Lena are sucking their life force out.
And they manage to... So you have the zombie... It's all just a matter of time. Yeah. They're trying to wait for midnight to pass, and then the curse is pretty much broken.
Yeah, if they don't have anybody dead, so yeah.
Although one must have to wonder, because at this point, the zombies are pretty much helping Scooby-Doo and them by trying to, like, bide them time, pretty much.
Yeah.
You gotta wonder, is this the first time they all tried to, like, hey, maybe let's get these assholes? and
they're finally like, you know what? Enough is enough.
It's been 200 years.
There's enough of us here. We could overpower these.
Yeah. So, which is exactly what they did. And they managed to stall them enough for enough time.
Yep. Werecat's dead. Zombie's gone. Gang's like, wow, that was nuts, but...
That was nuts.
We have no video footage to prove that this happened. And then Billy Gardner's like, hey, I'm actually FBI.
Yeah, so you know. Oh, and thank you for being useless, officer.
Yeah. Thanks, Agent. Did absolutely nothing the entire time.
Where's your gun?
Yeah.
He's like, because Bo's whole story was the gardener that looks the most suspicious, so you know he's not the one doing it.
Yeah.
Like, he's only been working there for a couple of months, and he was there researching to see what's with all the missing people.
Yeah, basically.
So, yeah. So I'll be like, dude, the way this garden looks, you're a shit gardener. But two, what are you even doing? Like, you haven't done anything to help us.
Yeah.
And it essentially ends happily ever after with them on a boat.
Yeah.
Going back home.
Going to solve more mysteries.
And it's a very short movie. I mean, it's a 75, 76 minute movie.
Yeah. You gotta think this probably aired on Cartoon Network with commercials, so it's probably like 2 hours on Cartoon Network. It's
probably 2 hours. This initially, from what I saw, was going to be a theatrical release, but it was around the time in 1998, 99 when home video movies were starting to get a lot more
popular. Yeah.
Popular. So this ended up being direct to video.
Okay.
All right. So yes. So I'm happy. I just wanted to talk about this. A, to relive my childhood, but B, I don't know. Like, just because I'm also getting older, I compare nowadays cartoons, and it's always going to be an instance where I'm like, cartoons back in my day were better. So what did you think of this as like what did you think?
When I think of like my childhood cartoon, I never really think of Scooby-Doo that much.
Neither do I.
Yeah, it was always like Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon.
Scooby-Doo.
The Libre show, yeah.
I don't think of Scooby-Doo that much, but I think of Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island because it was one of those movies that when it came out, I just remember watching it a lot. It just happened to be everywhere. And I just have fond memories of it.
Okay.
As I was sitting watching, I was like, man, the music was just so nice. This is also kind of when I want to break it down.
Yeah, that's hard.
Because I'll start if you...
All right.
I wanted it for technicals. I said for the time, 1998, it had a $10 million budget and it was made for direct to video. For context, this was the same year that the Rugrats movie came out.
Okay.
The first Rugrats movie came out in 98 and that had a budget of $25 million and that was a theatrical.
Yeah.
So judging this based on it being a direct to video with a lower budget, I gave it a 6.6.
Okay. Probably going to give it a 6.2.
That's fair. You know what I was actually comparing it to? Because the animation, it's better than the show, but it's not better than a lot of anime. It's Hanna-Barbera, so it's gonna be that kind of animation.
Yeah.
I kept comparing it to another direct-to-video movie, and that was Aladdin 2.
Never seen that one. I've only saw the first one.
Well, if you saw the first one, did you see the third one at all?
No.
Well, if you saw the first one and then you saw the third one, or the second one, you can tell that one was for a theater and one was direct to video because the animation was a huge dip.
Yeah.
This one, it's a huge advance compared to the show, but dip if you're comparing it to other animated movies that came out that year.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Now on to story, where they basically took everything they had and threw it into a story. And somehow it all made sense.
And for the time, it was a big deal for especially for people who like the show.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, this is the first time that we're actually having real monsters. You can follow it. I'm giving it a mid seven. It's in the mid seven somewhere.
Oh, I'm going probably 5.9 for me.
5.9?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to give a 7.
Okay.
And for enjoyment, I'm being completely biased and it's my nostalgia. I'm going to give it 8.5.
8.5.
And I'm fully aware that that is nostalgia and bias.
I'm going to give it a 6.4 for enjoyment.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I was running the gamble because Scooby-Doo is always one of those things that it's never hilarious. And the show itself is always, it's kind of a comfort show. It's just kind of a comfort thing to have in the background. But it was never my favorite show growing up.
Yeah.
But I just remember seeing this movie like a lot back in the day. Yeah. But I'm happy that, and this was the first time we actually had A, one that was like a kids type movie, and B, one that's animated. So it was cool to throw an animated movie in there.
Yeah.
Except for, I mean, I gave you Paranorman, but that's for homework.
Yeah. Now, so an average score between us of 20.3 out of 30. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
I think it's, you're usually the keeper of the Rotten Tomatoes score. Let me do it.
All right.
Okay, Wesley Lovell says, the crew's reunion is predictable, and the first 30 minutes provide a plethora of laughs, but also its share of slow events.
Okay, all right.
Trace Thurman says, retains the Scooby IP goofy charms while simultaneously working as a surprisingly dark form of gateway horror for children.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that's a perfect like gateway horror movie for kids.
That's exactly what I thought, too, because I was that age when I first watched it. And what do we got here? Trying to find some of the lower ones here. Because for the most part, it looks like people are giving it high scores. And I think a lot of these reviews also say, yeah, I grew up with it, so I like it.
Yeah.
For the most part, though, these ratings seem to be high to middle.
Yeah.
So 60, so a 20-something out of 30 is kind of perfect.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of interested now in your childhood. Let us talk about your childhood.
See, my childhood is, by the time I was like 5 or 6, I was already watching Halloween, Friday the 13th. Like, I went to cartoons for like comedy and stuff, but for horror, I went actual horror movies. But I think we're going to review the first movie I remember giving me a nightmare.
That's cool.
And it's such a random movie, too. And I really haven't seen it since I was a kid, but I'm pretty sure it's considered a pretty bad movie.
This will be an interesting one to watch because, like I said, I hadn't seen Scooby-Doo in many, many years. So yeah. This is why I wanted to do it, to review. All right, what is it?
All right, 2001's Valentine.
I think I remember hearing you talk about the movie.
Yeah, I think it's just the masculine movie that kind of freaked me out. But yeah.
So you would have been, how old would you have been? About
I was 10 when this.
10?
Yeah. 9, getting ready to turn 10 later that year when it came out. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so we would have both been. That's because we're the same age. Yeah. All right, let me bring it up. You said it came out in 2000?
Yeah, it has a pretty stacked cast of
Valentine.
Denise Richards, Marley Shelton, Katherine Heigl, David Boreanaz. Yeah.
Oh, that mask is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
So, so your season of Second Childhood is a rated R slasher film?
Yeah. I was watching rated R slasher films basically my entire life. Yeah,
I think for me, like as a kid, I did get scared of certain like rated R movies. Growing up, I didn't really start watching horror until the era of the PSP.
Yeah,
when I first saw the movie Saw on my friend's PSP.
Yeah,
I'd say that is probably when I started getting my love for horror. So that would have been around Saw come out, early 2000s.
The first Saw came out in 2001. I saw it when it came out.
I think I saw it maybe like a year or two. So I think I was like more like...
Well, PSP didn't come out until like 3 or 4 years after Saw.
So I would have been like more 13 when I started really getting... I mean, I might have seen it in passing. I remember seeing commercials for Saw, and it just, the way people talked about it made it sound like it was like the goriest movie ever.
Yeah.
Which turned out to be not too far.
Yes, but it was either this movie, Valentine, or a slasher movie that I watched all the time as a kid.
Which is?
That I know is complete dog shit.
Was that?
Friday the 13th, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Is that one that you really like even though you think it's dog shit, or one that you don't like?
I loved it as a kid. Now I'm like, yeah, this movie's terrible.
We'll have to have next season when we do our rankings. We'll have to do all of the Friday the 13th at some point.
Yeah.
But okay, so we're gonna go Valentine then.
Valentine, yeah.
That is hilarious. Like if you just Chris, what was a TV show that you grew up with that was kind of like, oh, I like Scooby Doo. What about you, Dave? This slasher film called Valentine.
Yeah. Very different childhoods.
But I'm looking forward.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for just taking a stroll with me down my own memory lane.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. Have a good week, everybody.
See ya. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at Body Bag Pod and on Instagram at Body Bag Podcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.